91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. Our first Thursday segment reflects on the fabulous Keys with word about the Florida Keys History and Discovery Center. Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. The center is in Isla Mirada. Its main focus, the Upper Keys. And there's more this hour. Linda Gastenheimer finds out about a new wrinkle in Miami's influence in the food truck trend. How about using those funky mobile restaurants as training stations for urban teens? That's the MO of the Vibe 305 nonprofit food truck by Empowered Youth. And get this, the kids are taught by the famous Joe's Stone Crab chefs. Count me in. First, NPR News. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, it's today's Topical Currents. The fascinating features of the Florida Keys include prehistoric humans, native peoples, and the Spanish, including Ponce de Leon in 1513.
There were pirates, hurricanes, and shipwrecks, and a long living coral barrier reef, a strong fishing industry, and of course, tourism.
Today we focus on the Florida Keys History and Discovery Center, a nonprofit museum in Isla Mirada. On the phone now, we have its executive director. She's Jill Miranda Baker. Welcome to you. Thanks for joining us.
Hi there.
Hi.
Thanks for having us.
Good to have you. Also by phone, it's Brad Bertelli, a Florida Keys historian and columnist for the Reporter newspaper, and he's the museum's curator. Welcome to you, Brad.
Well, thank you for having us.
Good to have you. So, Jill Miranda, I thought we might begin with a brief history of the Florida Keys History and Discovery Foundation and Center now.
All right. Well, it's actually a brief history because we've only been around for about 3.5 years.
Right.
But we've aggressively have built a museum from blank blue walls and now have numerous permanent exhibits talking about Indians and First People of the Keys, Spanish treasure fleets, pirates, wreckers, and salvagers, history of fishing and the start of tourism in the community, as well as a model of Indian Key, and a vast exhibit called Stories of the Upper Keys that talks about Flagler's Railroad, the development of the Upper Keys, and ends with the devastating 1935 Labor Day hurricane. We also have a state-of-the-art 35-seat theater in which we play documentaries during our business hours. We also have matinees that we feature films made in and or about the Florida Keys, as well as we've been showing the Bloodline series for our locals to enjoy.
Well, we always get to funding issues. How is the funding accomplished?
We do a lot of funding, fundraising. We rely on our memberships. We have several levels of membership. We also charge a nominal admission fee to get into the museum. We have a group of 50 donors who pledged $10,000 over the course of 5 years, and that really gave us our start to start building. And next week we're going to be making a significant announcement of a community member who is donating $1 million to put their name on a building, and that's going to really help us exponentially.
Well, can you give WLRN the scoop on that?
Sure. Ken and Dee Meek are a long time Isla Mirada resident.
We have kind of a funny connection.
Yeah,
repeat
it's an echo.
That.
Okay, is that better?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, Ken and Dee Meek are longtime Isla Mirada residents and philanthropists in our community. Ken founded the first bank in Isla Mirada. It was then called the Island Bank. It turned into TIB Bank and had locations all over the Keys, throughout Monroe County, and up into Homestead. It later became Capital Bank.
Oh.
But Ken has a strong interest in history, particularly Indian Key. He previously underwrote the cost of our Indian Key model that we have, which is circa 1840. And he's getting up in years, as his wife is, and he wanted to leave a legacy for his community and be well remembered and help us achieve our mission to preserve and share the history of the Upper Keys. So we're just absolutely delighted, and we're having a big celebration for him Saturday next week, and it's going to be his 90th birthday, so it's even more worthy of celebration.
Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
On that. Thank you. Endowment. Let's bring Brad Bertelli in. He's the curator of the Florida Keys History and Discovery Center. Brad, I was surprised. I listened to your on your website, which happens to be keysdiscovery.com, by the way.
Yes.
I was surprised to learn that there are over 150 prehistoric sites in the Florida Keys, many of them in the Upper Keys.
They stretch from all of Monroe County, from Key Biscayne down to Key West and the Marquesas. Yeah, well over 150 documented prehistoric sites, many of which have been, you know, destroyed in the name of building and looking ahead to the future, and they've disregarded these, you know, in cases over 1,000-year-old sites that are have been lost.
Oh. Why did you specifically want to tell the history of the Upper Keys? Is it because generally they don't garner as much attention as the Lower Keys?
Absolutely. There's a tremendous wealth of history in all of Monroe County, you know, from Biscayne Bay to the Dry Tortugas. And normally when you're down here, people kind of assume that Key West is the place to go in the Keys. And Key West has a wonderful history. They also have a plethora of museums already there. But there's not a lot of history being documented in the Upper Keys. And there's an amazing, you know, it's just tremendous Flagler to prehistoric people, to Spanish treasure fleets, to Indian Key, which is my favorite site in all of Monroe County. In the 1830s, Indian Key, which is a little 11-acre island, it's out in the middle of the Atlantic, about a mile offshore in the Atlantic, used to have, in 1835, they had a hotel and a bowling alley and a population of over 140 people. It was actually the largest community in the Florida Keys outside of Key West, and acted in direct competition with Key West.
Actually, Brad, we have many of our listeners probably listen in the city of Pirine in southern Miami-Dade County. Tell how the Pirines and Indian Key are related.
Well, Henry Pirine was working as a consul down in Yucatan, and the president asked all of the ambassadors around, you know, to start collecting data on plants that could be useful to they could bring back to the Americas.
Brad, can you just hold it for 1 second? Are you and Jill in the same room?
Yeah, I'll go out.
Could one of you go in a different room so we could hear both of you?
It's an echo that's kind of...
Yeah, there's an echo, and then you can resume your conversation about Indian Key.
All right.
And the Pirines. There we go.
All right, better.
Yeah.
Much better. I'm sure our listeners are relieved, too.
All right. Well, Henry Pirine was fascinated with plants and horticulture, and he took copious notes and sent back hundreds and hundreds of boxes and crates of seedlings and small plants to both Key Biscayne and Indian Key. He was going to develop the Tropical Plant Company, and he arrived on Indian Key on Christmas Day, 1838. With the he'd been given a land grant in Pirine, Florida, and that was where he was going to develop his tropical plant company. And his primary plant was the sisal, sisal agave, which, when broken up, had the hemp could be manufactured into clothes and blankets and all kinds of useful things. And this was the plant that he really was trying to build up to create, you know, a really good economy, a plant economy for the U.S.
Well, get on to the good stuff.
Unfortunately, in 1840, on August 7th, during the Second Seminole War, there was an Indian attack on Indian Key. And there were about 50 people living on the island at that time. And of the seven people that were killed during the attack, Henry Pirine was one of the victims. His wife and three children all escaped. And a lot of the history that we know about that attack comes from memoirs written by two of his children.
Well, our listeners can keep that in mind when they drive down Dixie Highway here.
Yeah, absolutely.
So is that why there's so little left of Indian Key, because of the attack, the war there?
It's a ghost town.
Well, it was a large, thriving community with like 45 buildings, and in its heydays, you know, more than 140 people living on the island. And when the Indians did attack, they did burn a lot of the buildings.
Oh.
But it did. You know, this was. Wrecking was still a super, you know, lucrative business, and the glory days of wrecking were the 1850s and 1860s and 1870s, and in fact, by 1870, Indian Key was still the second most populated city or community in the Upper Keys. There were roughly, in 1870, 130 people living in all of the Upper Keys, and 47 of them we're still living on Indian Key. At that point, the Pinder family, whose family still quite strong in the area, were farming pineapples and bananas on the island.
So what eventually caused it to be just ruins?
Hurricanes, time, you know, these were all buildings that were built by wood. They didn't withstand the several hurricanes. And also, as the Matacumbies became, Upper Matacumbe specifically, became more and more populated, families moved from Indian Key over to the growing communities, you know, on the islands, on Upper Matacumbe and Lower Matacumbe, Plantation Key, Key Largo. And then, of course, when Flagler arrives, starts building his train in 1906, while Flagler, you know, there was daily service to Key West in 1912, by 1908, there was daily service in the Upper Keys. So communities began to move away from the edges of the islands, where everything had to rely on boats.
So the railroad bypassed Indian Key, so that sealed the fate.
Right. Basically, yes.
What comprises the Upper Keys exactly? Which keys comprise the Upper Keys?
I try to concentrate, of course, Key Largo, Windley Key, Plantation Key, Upper Matacumbe, Lower Matacumbe, Indian Key, Lignum Bighty Key, which are two state parks, also Craig Key, and then there's also more than 50 islands north of Key Largo, you know, Rubicon, Old Rhodes Keys, you know, Porgy Key, Elliott Key.
I'm embarrassed to say that as a resident here, I've never heard of hardly any of these except the main ones.
Well, that's one of the things that we're doing here, because people, right. You know, people don't realize, you know, the wonderful histories that are in, you know, all of the Florida Keys. And I do tell a lot of the histories of Monroe County and the Florida Keys in general, but I try to stick to the Upper Keys, you know, in that's kind of my specialty, and that's, you know, I'm trying to tell the local history here.
Right. We're speaking about the Florida Keys History and Discovery Center in Isla Mirado with its curator, Brad Bertelli, and its executive director, Jill Miranda Baker. On today's Topical Currents, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
And we return. It's today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. We're talking about the Florida Keys History and Discovery Center, sprinkled in with some Florida Keys history, particularly the Upper Keys. We have the executive director, Jill Miranda Baker, and also Brad Bertelli, the museum's curator and historian. Jill Miranda Baker, you're quite a figure in the Upper Keys, the Rotary president, the Isla Mirada Chamber of Commerce. You're on the Health Education Board member. And your husband, Dwayne, is a fishing guide in the backcountry. So you have quite a life there. You must have a lot of great recreational experiences.
Actually, I'm a fishing widow because my husband's always out on the water working, so I never get to appreciate it.
Oh, I thought you were going to say he wasn't living anymore.
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
I don't get to appreciate the outdoors as much. But no, I've been here 20 years, and it's a great life. We have two teenage kids, and it's a great place to raise a family. And I'm very blessed to have come on board with the Keys History and Discovery Foundation as their first executive director and built this up and put us on the map. And I have a great coworker in Brad, whose passion in history is like nothing I've ever seen.
I was going to say,
it's a fun ride.
I'm sorry, I was going to say yes. His enthusiasm definitely comes through.
And your mile marker at the museum is.
We're at mile marker 82. We're on the property of the Islander Resort, which is a Guy Harvey outpost. And we are lucky enough to have a very generous lease for 50 years on the property. And we are open Thursdays through Sundays, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And right now our doors are open through the work of volunteers. We have a core group of volunteers who staff and serve as docents, so Brad and I can concentrate on what we need to do.
How did you secure this location?
This building that we're in was built about 4 years ago with the two purposes. One, to have ballroom, conference room space, and the second purpose, to have a museum on Upper Keith history. The owner of the Islander property, David Curry, is a big history buff, and he recognized a need in the community that there was not a history, a museum specific to the history of the Upper Keys, and he made that happen. He made it a reality for it to happen, and we couldn't be more grateful to him for that.
Brad, if you would talk about some of the permanent exhibits and some other things going on at the museum and lecture series and exhibits that are planned for the future.
What I'm, most excited about, or what I was most excited about, was given the opportunity to build a model of Indian Key, how it would have looked before the Indian attack in 1840. Because you go out to the island, and it is a ghost town, Florida Key's only ghost town, and there are some ruins. But we were able, with the help of Henry Perrine's youngest son, Henry Jr., who actually drew a ground plan in 1885. So we had an idea of where the buildings were, didn't know what the buildings looked like, so we had to do a lot of research on early architecture in the Florida Keys. But that is that was the funnest project for me. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, the first exhibit we did was a exhibit called Legends of the Line, which talks about a lot of the early fishing guides from the 20s and the 30s and the 40s. Also, I have exhibits on the first people, the Indians who lived here, well over 1,000 years ago. Also, the Spanish treasure fleets. I concentrated on the 1733 fleets because those ships wrecked just off the shore of the Upper Keys. So all of the, about 90% of all of the artifacts we have on exhibit are things that have been cultivated and found locally, which is really cool and helps, kind of show a little added depth to the history. Also, could not talk about wrecking and pirates, if they were or were not here, and the salvagers, and Art McKee, the father of modern treasure hunting. And as Jill was saying earlier, our latest exhibit is called Stories of the Upper Keys, which is definitely the largest, most intricate exhibit that we put on yet. And it tells a lot of the stories about the first communities and how that have kind of woven through tendrils of the highway and hurricanes and the first families and the businesses and Flagler's railroad. And we do have three more major exhibits to install downstairs on the first floor where all our permanent exhibits are. And we'll do one on the bay and the reef, how Florida Bay and the Everglades and seagrass and mangroves and the coral reefs are all interconnected. I'm excited about that exhibit. I'm going to do one about the invasive and endangered species. The Burmese pythons are making headlines, the lionfish, but also the endangered species like the American crocodile and manatees. And then also I'm going to redo our first exhibit, the Legends of the Line, to incorporate more legends and also the commercial aspect of fishing in the Florida Keys.
Brad Bertelli, you're originally a Southern California guy, and by way of University of Miami, I suppose that's how you got your introduction into the Florida Keys culture.
Definitely. I had I went to University of Miami and got my master's degree in creative writing, and I moved down to the Florida Keys to pursue my novel.
And you wanted to be the next Hemingway or
yes.
Tennessee Williams, I suppose.
Yes, and then I got my first book deal called Snorkeling Florida with University Press of Florida. And while doing research for that book, everybody I would talk to had their own story of how this reef got its name or how that reef got its name. And I ended up doing my own research and just got hooked with all the amazing history down here.
Now, you're in Marathon. How did that get its name? Does it relate to the railroad?
Marathon is in the Middle Keys, And that is really an umbrella term for a, like Isla Rava is an umbrella term for a number of islands. Marathon is an umbrella term for several islands, Grassy Key, Vaca Key, as well as several others. And that goes back to the railroad, you know, because it was, I believe the story is, as they were building the 7 Mile Bridge, it was a marathon to get through every day, and so that was kind of how the marathon name came out of it.
Why did all those ships wreck in the Keys? I mean, why were there so many shipwrecks in the Keys? Is it because of the
storms?
It's always because of the storms?
Well, there are several factors. First off, you have the Florida Reef, which is the third largest a barrier reef system that grows in examples where it's visible on the surface, so maybe 4 feet down or 10 feet or 20 feet down. Plus, you have the Gulf Stream, which is pushing these boats. And back in those days, boats were reliant on sail only, so they were subject to the wind and the waves. Mm-hmm. They were often, plus with the help of the Gulf Stream, would be pushed into the reef system. Hurricanes, always a problem, and also there was no lighting. So once a series of lighthouses began to dot the Keys, from Dry Tortugas to Key West to American Shoal down by Sugarloaf and Sombrero Key out in the Marathon area, and then Alligator Lighthouse and Carysport Lighthouse, as these began to develop from the 1820s to the 1880s, and also as maps and charts began to improve, and as ships moved from sail to steam and had better control, the shipwrecks lessened and lessened over the years. And by about 1910, 1911, pretty much the wrecking industry was all kaput.
Mm. Jill Miranda, tell us about this research library that's going to open in, I guess it's next month?
Yes, we're in the process of building out our research library. It is named after well-regarded Upper Keys historian Jerry Wilkinson, who's been documenting Upper Keys history for about 3 decades. And we're trying to make it a place where people, casual researchers, scholars, students, et cetera, can come and really delve into the history. We have several collections that Brad can speak to a little more detailed, and we hope that it drives even more people to our facility.
Including the collection of Willie Dry, who will be giving a talk on Wednesday the 10th on his great book as part of our lecture series, Storm of the Century.
Yeah, we actually had him on the show and interviewed him about that book.
Excellent, yeah.
Give him our best.
Yes.
Fantastic. Yeah, we do a pretty extensive lecture series that has been very successful. We're bringing in between 60 and 150, and in cases we've had over 250 people show up for our lectures, which has really been fantastic.
That is great. So how far is mile marker 82 from, let's say, Miami?
Two hours, an hour and a half.
Okay.
Depending on where you're coming from.
All right. Yeah, I just wanted to say generally so that our listeners would know if they're up here.
Probably a little longer on Friday afternoon.
Absolutely. Yeah, probably.
Probably about an hour from Miami International Airport.
Ah, that's a good measuring stick.
If the traffic is working with you.
Well,
Go
ahead.
We actually have several members who come from Miami to come to our lectures, people that live in Coral Gables. I have a gentleman who lives in Miami Beach, people who live in Palmetto Bay. So we have a lot of members, and they really enjoy our lecture series, and they'll drive down for the night, have an early dinner or dinner after. They enjoy it. And it amazes me that people do that, but they like what they're getting down here.
That's great. Or they could take a mini vacation and stay overnight at one of the great places there. Well, we've been speaking about the Florida Keys History and Discovery Center in Isla Mirada with its executive director, Jill Miranda Baker. And she is also the incoming president of the Rotary Club of the Upper Keys and an ambassador of the Isla Mirada Chamber of Commerce. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Also with us is Brad Bertelli. He's the curator and historian of the Florida Keys History and Discovery Center. And he's also a columnist for the Reporter newspaper and an author. And we thank you, Brad. And again, their website is keysdiscovery.com. They're at mile marker 82. At the Islander Resort. And we thank you so much for being with us, and we wish you the best with the museum. And congratulations on your endowment.
Thank you very
much. And for letting us tell our story.
Our pleasure.